So, great, so we always begin with a conversation and just kind of get some context for the evening. So this is a first time collaboration. So I gather you guys have not even played one note together or just
no.
talked about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, not even one.
So it's going to be very very fresh. We're going to be discovering this right before our ears, as Tom has often said. Tom Buckner.
Can I supply a little preface?
Please.
Okay. Many years ago, I heard Tom in a performance with the wonderful Tom Buckner sitting right here, the two of them, at the Old Roulette. And I loved it. And ever since that time, there's been something there somewhere within me, like kind of a little aspiration to create some music with Tom. But somehow, you go through the years and whatever, it the moment just never came together. So, you know, Dan invited me to do this and didn't know exactly what I'd do. But then we were at a concert sitting next to each other, and Dan tapped my shoulder and said he wanted to talk to me, and I thought, my God, I've got to tell him what I'm going to do. And I realized the moment had come. So I just turned to Tom and asked him to do it with me. It's just like felt great ever since.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, great.
I'm glad we had that seat next to us.
Well, it was there in my mind. It's so fortuitous as that.
Right. So one key ingredient here that both of you are very involved in your work generally is improvisation. So we're primarily exploring improvisation.
Yeah.
So, and also the contrast between acoustic, purely acoustic in this case, and electronic. So how do you approach this, or what are you imagining how these sounds are going to interact, if you've imagined it. Well, there we go.
Well,
there we
let
go.
Me just say,
let me mum's just, the word.
Right. Let me just say, for me, my approach to playing, whether you call it improvisation or something else, is to create a separate layer that exists, and when things are apart, well, that's part of the counterpoint, and when they're together, well, that's part of the resolution or cadence. So I think in those terms, but I generally think about playing in my own direction, and I think that I have faith that the listener puts together what I'm doing and what the other person is doing, and they the listener creates the relationships. I don't create anything. I just play what I play, and perhaps Connie does things differently, or thinks about it differently.
Well, from my feeling, I would imagine and actually hope that each and every artist would do things differently. So I think this is part of what art is and part of the excitement of it. But I never see the differences as being exclusionary or contradictory. And part of what has been so exciting about the prospect of doing this concert is what Dan just said, is to be open to fathom how the contradictions between purely electronic sound and purely acoustic sound can find a merge or a kind of counterpoint. So I'm very intrigued. I have to say, Tom and I both talked this over at our talk through and tonight as well. We have no idea what the music will be.
Sorry.
Oh, it's an adventure, for sure.
Yes.
Well, Well, if I may ask you, Connie, I mean, you know, you've been improvising for a long time, and I gather it's really a core principle for you, right? And so how did that come about for you? I mean, you've been doing it for a long time, so mm-hmm. but how did it arrive for you that you became, you know, so focused on improvisation?
I'm going to have to make a very long story very short.
Great.
I came up as a classical player, mm-hmm. but it's never what I wanted to be, because when I was a little kid, you know, I started right out composing, and I honestly felt that I would be a composer when I grew up, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I could do something about it, I definitely went as deep into it as I could at the time, mm-hmm. and found out that there were some ways in which it was not for me. Mm. So I didn't know what else I might do. I knew I was going to spend my life creating music. I didn't know really a thing about jazz. Mm-hmm. And I had never improvised before. Mm-hmm. When you're a classical piano player, that's not one of the things that you get taught mostly. It's like, doesn't come up. And so starting from point zero with a backlog of experience that didn't really carry over some of it, mm-hmm. I went into an entirely new world for me, which became my life. But as I went into it in greater depth, the deeper I went, the more I realized that two worlds are not so separate. There's many respects in which the actual matter, subject matter, and I mean that not just the content of the music, but the actual substance of music itself, mm-hmm. it's a much more deeply shared world than people may feel. Mm-hmm. It's widely known now that some of our favorite composers were great improvisers. And now, in both worlds, there are both procedures that are current. Mm-hmm. Many people who've come up classically trained now are excellent improvisers, and you know. And then among jazz people, there is an openness toward more variety or range of sound, which I find extremely fascinating. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I realized early on as an improviser, as I got more and more deeply into the very first decades of the incredible music, jazz, that's I saturated myself in it, and I highly recommend it to everyone. I realized that I didn't want to accept any limits on my music. Mm-hmm. So anything that I might hear or imagine that I felt was my province as a jazz improviser. So this is how I would find so much common ground with someone like Tom. I heard him. And on the instant, you know, I felt a resonance and a lot of affinity.
Excellent. Was there a kind of a pivotal experience or an epiphany or so on, or something along that timeline for you that just, you know, clicked? Or was it sort of more of a gradual thing? I mean,
well, yes, there was an epiphany.
Mm-hmm. That was what, in the 60s, 70s or sometime?
Pretty intense. I mean, an epiphany is intense, right? But
sure.
My epiphany, the turning point, was quite strange. Because I didn't know anything about jazz. A friend of mine had a blues record, an Atlantic blues sampler. He was a blues guitar player. He said, you got to hear this. So we went and put the record right on. I didn't know what it was. And in 4 minutes' time, my life was changed, and that was the 4 minutes that it takes to listen to Lenny Tristano's great piece, Requiem. Mm. And it wasn't as if I heard the music and I somehow thought, oh, I can go there. He has something that he can teach me, you know. I didn't even know who he was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he was a teacher or anything about him.
Right.
It was... sorry, I'm going to have to go here, or I can't express what the epiphany was like. Mm. I went into my future. So whatever that was, all proved out. It was not a fantasy or a trick of the mind. There was something very true about it.
Mm-hmm. So it all was kind of a flash, your future.
It was as if my future reached back into that moment and let me in on what it was going to be. Now there's an epiphany.
All right, that's amazing. So, So you, of course, went on to study and work with Lanny Tristano quite extensively, right? So,
yes.
And so I guess from my, he's kind of considered really the first free player. Is that basically true? And what does it mean to be free in this case? We all have an idea of what free is, but I...
Like every composer, in a sense, might know what this is because you don't relate to tunes. In the jazz idiom, everything was based on tunes for a long time.
Of course.
And then free improvisation could not be even conceptualized unless the jazz musician would break out of that mindset. And that's what Lenny did. He used to bring his band into Birdland. He played free improvisation in Birdland. And the audience had no problem with it whatsoever. It wasn't the audience. It was in the studio when they were doing the recording. The recording engineer had such a problem with it that after the second selection, when they started in on the third selection, he started screaming and he left the recording booth. And the rest is history.
And the tape continued to roll, imagine, or
no? He shut it down and left. And just to finish answering the question, it's what it certainly means is that in front there's no thought about the music. There's no tune, but there's no harmonic progression. There's no melodic configuration that to keep in mind, or points of resolution that you remember. In fact, none of that is there. It's 100% intuitive. And in fact, in those years, they didn't call it free improvisation. What they called it was intuition. So I had heard a conversation once among them, and I think it was Billy Bauer saying, remember when we used to go by Lenny's and play some intuition?
When exactly was that?
Well, Lenny started doing that with them in 1947, and then he recorded in
49.
Well, when did you come to New York?
Well, that was in 1962. Yeah.
And have you been here ever since? Or?
Oh, I sure have.
1962.
Yes.
All right, and so I gather you, I know you're in Williamsburg now, but you probably, you've seen the city change quite a bit since then.
Oh, I'm not going to go there.
Okay. Well, it's certainly that could go
it's
on.
It's a whole different
night.
Subject.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, how about you, Tom? I mean, I know you're very deeply into improvisation as well. So, how did that come about for you?
Well, I actually started out as a kid with some affinity for jazz, and it was what I wanted to do. I wanted to play jazz trumpet, and then I wanted to play jazz piano, and I related to improvisation when I was pretty young, and it was all tune based,
right?
You know, as things were, and working with early on with electronic music was a completely separate kind of function for me, and I didn't even put it together with improvised music in the beginning. It was more making pieces that were fixed on recording tape, and so it was a studio kind of mode to be in. And so obviously when you play the tape back, it's the same every time, and internally if there's a lot of improvisation going on to get to where you want to go to, that's a different thing.
Sure.
But you're I was trying to make sound objects.
Compositions.
Yeah. Compositions,
in effect.
Right.
Not improvisation.
So improvising was something separate and something that was pretty workaday for me. I mean, it was, especially in college, it was just going out every weekend and playing whatever gigs there were to be played and playing standards and, you know, all the things that people do. And at a certain point when I was actually able to get instruments that I could take to a gig, then the question became, well, how am I going to use these with players of traditional acoustic instruments, mm-hmm. and you know, what's their mindset and how can I be part of that? And at first, I tried to do the same kind of one-on-one improvisation that I might do as a piano player. Mm-hmm. So you know, but doing it with electronics, and I realized that was impossible. That's not what the instruments were cut out to do, and it's not what I was cut out to do. And once I just let go of all that, mm-hmm. and created a different role for myself within an ensemble, it became easier for me to play with a wide variety of people. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to say, it's a little bit that sometimes people, I think, have to come a little bit to my world through some kind of explanation or demonstration, because there's the things I can do and the things that I can't do. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. I guess we're all like that in a way, but in a different way. So, yeah.
Well, good. Well, I guess I wasn't aware that you had a period in your life as a jazz musician or at least kind aspiring, of, if not
yeah,
actual.
Aspiring's a good word for it, but. You know, I guess okay. You know, after you played several hundred gigs doing it,
I'd
then
say you were,
probably
yeah, I
are.
I think you were
know.
A jazz musician. It sounds yeah, like you yeah. were. So, yeah. so equally as a trumpeter and pianist,
more piano playing.
More piano yeah. playing. Yeah. No, yeah. I heard you playing some chords here earlier, and I was like, yeah. whoa! That's a side of you I didn't
yeah.
know, and that's why.
Yeah.
Well, now was that just something that you took an interest in yourself, or was it part of the environment? Now, you're from St. Louis, so I mean, I'm guessing that it was a pretty... Originally from Milwaukee.
Yeah, and so it was very much a part of my growing up
right.
and college in Milwaukee,
uh-huh.
and the opportunities for playing probably were more plentiful in those days, in the late 60s.
Okay.
And I moved to St. Louis in 69, and... It was sort of a different environment for playing jazz in those days.
Than Milwaukee?
Yeah. In some ways, Milwaukee, it's just the difference of years more than anything else. That the mid-60s, there was more opportunities. There was more neighborhood bars with little groups that got together. And and there was just, utility jobs, right? You know, weddings and
right.
parties and things like
right.
that.
Right, a lot more
quasi jazz gigs.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
So yeah.
Well, at what point did you really fully, take on electronics as your main?
Uh-huh.
When
uh-huh.
did that happen?
Well, for one thing, dropping playing piano in terms of, how I spent my weekends. Let's say I did that. I had started to work as a studio engineer around 1980. And I didn't have any more. I really didn't have any more time to be doing other things,
mm-hmm.
so that was a good thing to drop for me, because, just for a lot of reasons.
Right.
And the stuff with electronics, I got more and more opportunities in the 70s, because when I moved to St. Louis to go to grad school, after grad school, the university I was at, Washington University. Wanted to have an electronic music studio.
Uh-huh.
And this is like 1971, and there were very few of them mm-hmm. in the country, but they got a little grant to do it, and so they hired me first to purchase and design the studio,
wow.
and then to teach in the studio, and I did that for a number of years. And through that, I became more known in the community in that and got more opportunities as a composer and just followed through. And then I kind of dropped the other things in music that, mm-hmm. Were less interesting to me at that point.
I see. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And when did you come to New York, if I may ask?
1987. So I've been here, I guess, 28 years. I guess.
Right. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very good. Well, how about you, Connie? Have you also played other instruments or had other sort of musical... periods in your life, or is it primarily?
I am deeply bonded with the piano.
Great. And do you still play classical repertoire to any extent, or did you ever stop?
I have no need to.
You have no need to.
I will put it this way. After I had been improvising for about 7 years, just out of curiosity, I took out some of my old sheet music. I took out some Bach preludes and fugues, and I took out Schoenberg's Six Little Pieces, and I was curious to know how it would feel to play.
Hmm.
And not only did it feel quite different to play, it was so easy. I didn't expect this. I don't know how to explain this.
Well,
when I became deep into improvisation, it opens up a kind of what I can call an energy that that is your source more than, say, finger motion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When I was a classical player, I would say the focus was more on varying ways of using your fingers and, of course, your ears and your understanding. I had a good teacher. But, you know, with this, it's a deeper energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing I can say to account for this odd experience I had. But once I did that, though, I had satisfied something within me. But as an improviser, for myself, I have felt that there is a mode of musical creation which I value so highly that it's just about all I want to do. And I want to give it a brief description.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes like this. There's the creating mind source. And if you don't set it down and work with it, you have to accept the creating mind's open flow. You will not get a chance to change it or do anything with it, you know. You have to accept the music. You cannot edit it in any form afterwards, the way you can when you compose,
mm-hmm.
and which I had done before. I mean, I was very, very familiar with that mode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite different. So one of the things I felt that I identified with is the logic, and I've got to explain this, because it's a different kind of logic. It isn't the kind of logic that is set in any form, and it doesn't pre-exist, obviously. You know, and I'm not talking about standard tunes.
Right.
Although I would say that if you reach a certain level with improvisation, you can even get this within standard tunes. They no longer confine you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, the logic is intrinsic. So while the music creates while you play, the music has a logic that's within it that's intrinsic. And as I went through the years with this, my main way to check this, of course, is to record. When you spontaneously improvise, you may not remember a lot of what you just did. But the recordings showed me that it was in the most very deep in moments of spontaneous improvisation that the logic was stronger and more intriguing. And if I could say, besides the joy of doing it, it's a wonderfully joyous expression, that maybe that pulled me in deeper than anything. Because that was my starting point after all. I started out with an aspiration to compose. And, you know, when you have that, part of what draws you in, let's face it, is the logic. It gets fascinating. It's not like brain or like some kind of esoteric theoretical exercise. It's the very thing in music that draws you to want to create it that way. And so that's the way I felt that I wanted to spend my life. I have been drawn in it more and more deeply as I've gone through the years.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like for me the most fulfilling way to create the music that satisfies this desire that I've got for hopefully for musical beauty and feeling and logic.
Mm-hmm. And it comes from the source you're refer to. So that sounds like a special place that you, and how do you, is, what are the conditions for finding that? I guess it's a lifelong practice, right?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I have a metaphor that I like to say to people to make this a little more understandable. And it's drawn from geometry. So right now, Euclidean geometry is still very important. We need it to this day.
Right.
And it is beautiful in and of itself, you know? It has to do with ideal forms. And the big breakthrough, but you know, they're useful. They're not idealized. They're real in that way. And they pre-exist.
Mm-hmm.
With fractal geometry, there was a tremendous breakthrough because you could look at an object in nature and see the geometry within. This hadn't been conceivable before.
Mm-hmm.
So. What people felt was if you looked at a tree, you would not see a geometric form. You would see something that was chaotic and not subject to geometrical understanding or procedures.
Right.
But the big breakthrough was when they discovered, like, at a certain level of seeing, the logic is apparent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it does become amenable to working with it and understanding it and proceeding in purely geometrical terms. So this to me is the metaphor, because with the given forms of musical logic, they're still very valid and we can work within them, you know, there's no limit on it.
Right.
But at the same time, it is now possible, I feel, mostly thanks to the advent of recording, which enables us to hear music without the necessity of writing it down. You can observe with spontaneous creation the logic that is within the music. So it will be intrinsic and not observable in the same sense as extrinsic form, but it has its own beauty and consistency and strength.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very nice.
Okay, well, that's wonderful, and a lot to think about and consider. That's great. And, well, good. Well, I feel maybe it's a good opportunity for us to transition into actually making sounds and bring that all to life, I guess, all that we've talked about. Does any other any questions or comments before we? So we'll have a couple minutes to just reset the stage, and so I guess we'll just kind of see where it goes. You know, you'll play as long as you play.